Welcome, everybody, to the Ask a Coach Q&A. My name is Jonathan Lee, a certified USA Cycling coach, and I take up the marketing and PR duties here at Trainer Road, part of that team. And I'm here with Coach Chad Timmerman, who's also a cycling coach. How you doing, Chad?
Doing well, Jonathan. Thanks.
Good to hear. Good to hear. This is an opportunity for all of you to ask your coaching questions and to get answers live from a coach. So Chad will be providing the bulk of those answers. Whatever questions you have, cycling related, whatever they may be, you're in the right place to get those answers. So we'll kick things off. Chad, go ahead and run us through some of the questions that you've been dealing with this week, perhaps.
Sure. So first off, we have done some webinars, some Training with Power 101 webinars, and we concluded each of them with a Q&A session, and we got a really good response from those sessions. So we figured we'd just cut to the chase and dive right into the questions. So that's what we're about today. I'm going to do my best to answer your questions as well as I can. This is kind of a one-way dialogue. So if I misunderstand your question, please feel free to reiterate. And if for whatever reason I can't answer your question, leave me your email address. Maybe it's something I need to look into. Maybe I just can't formulate a response on the spot, and I'll get back to you pretty much right after this webinar is over. I'll shoot you an email. Okay, so our first question comes from Juan B. Actually, Juan has a couple questions. First, he asks, how do you know when to integrate different training plans, base, build, and specialty? Is there any specific fitness point that can tell you when to move to another stage, or will these transitions depend only on race events and what you're preparing for? The structure of our plans kind of handle that for you. So it's not like a pass-fail sort of endeavor where you reach the end of the plan and you have to have achieved some metric before you can move on to the next one. Rather, you just roll through the weeks and continue on. And the plans are scheduled. Ideally, you've scheduled them at a proper duration from your event, such that it times out that you move through the base in probably 12 weeks, through the build in another 8 weeks, and then through your specialty plan, wrapping up, culminating right at your event. So certainly tied to the event you're preparing for. Juan B. also asks, after I did my first FTP test, I'm assuming I got my FTP number and Trainer Road adjusted my training to that number. My problem is that I need to translate that FTP into heart rate zones to use with my Garmin when I'm without power measurement indoors on my trainer. How can I do this? Juan, hopefully you wore a heart rate strap when you did your test, and that will have recorded or estimated a lactate threshold heart rate. And that'd be the number you'd plug into your Garmin, and it'll give you similar zones to power zones, except heart rate zones. All right, next. David BF asks, when I'm going hard, I find I naturally spin around 100 to 103 RPM. So I've been trying to stick to that, but then I'm left feeling in between gears on the cassette. Perhaps I should let my cadence down into the low mid 90s to find the right power while testing, especially as I'm ultimately training for cyclocross and probably don't want to train myself into too high a normal cadence. First off, when it comes to assessment, I almost always recommend do what you're best at. You know, try to get the highest power number you can get. And if that means spinning, in his case, at 100 to 103 RPM, do that. You can work on altering that cadence later over the course of the subsequent workouts. And then when you get to your next FTP test, maybe then you brought it down a little bit in David's case, and you can see if you yield better numbers. It's also a good time to mention specificity. I mean, he's a cyclocross racer, and I know there's a wide variation in the cadences you're going to use based on, you know, the course layout, the weather, a lot of things. So, in his case, I'm not sure there's one particular cadence at which he should train. So he might just assess at what he does best and then, mix it up over the course of his training.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to make out, is the fact that training at different cadences, there isn't perhaps an ideal one. It all comes down to what you're going to end up racing.
Yeah, and then when it comes to assessment, you're just trying to put up the biggest number you can, the best measure of your fitness. And if you do that at a particular cadence, don't buck it. You can work on that later on.
That's a good point. So we're getting through a few of these questions right here. And if you do have more questions, remember, guys, you can type those in. There's the questions section where you can type in your questions. It may also be labeled a chat window for you, whichever one it is. But type in the questions that you have. And as we're working through the list here, we'll get to them. And also feel free, if questions come up at any time, any coaching related questions, cycling related questions, just feel free to type them in. The next one we have, Chad, is how can I increase my weekly stress above what's provided in a plan without burning myself out or overreaching too far?
Okay, so the assumption here is this writer is asking beyond the scheduled intensity, how can I add more stress? You know, they probably wants to keep his TSS or his weekly stress load on the upward swing. And typically you're already getting enough intensity, and another day of intensity isn't gonna reward you like you might think. Typically 2 days a week are enough. Third day a week yields marginal gains. That fourth day a week is typically destructive. So once you've got your 2, maybe 3 days of quality, beyond that, it's really about aerobic volume. So in this case, if you wanted to bring up the stress a little bit, maybe you add 40 minutes, an hour of basically easy riding and just nudge that stress up without accumulating too much, you know, physiological damage, so to speak.
Perfect. The next one that we have, why does the TSS grow during base and build, but levels or declines during specialty plans? That's a pretty common question.
We get this question a lot, and the concern, and I understand it, I've been in the same boat, is that over the course of your base training, you watch your TSS grow from week to week. And obviously it declines during the recovery weeks, but then you get back in it and you continue to elevate it. Then you move on to the base phase, same thing. You're just growing that stress and with it, your fitness. Then once you get to specialty, you've about grown your training volume as high as it's going to get. So it's at that point that we just start to hone your fitness to the particular demands of whatever event you're going to take part in. So your TSS can level off. It might even drop a little bit, but the fitness is there. It's not going to go anywhere. The workouts will do a good job in maintaining the fitness you've built and then peaking those kind of specialized forms of fitness that you'll need for your events.
Perfect. Greg asks, how important is seat positioning and bike fit? I think it's really important, but I don't want to spend a lot of money getting fit. I would rather video myself on the bike, look at YouTube videos, and try to adjust the fit myself or with some help from cycling friends. Am I being foolish and should spend the money to do a professional bike fit and whatever it costs to adjust the bike to fit properly?
I was actually talking to Jonathan about this earlier, and we both came to the same conclusion that there are professional bike fitting services for a reason. It's a potentially very complex task. And the more advanced you become as an athlete, the higher you push your fitness, the more you're asking of yourself physically, the more important it becomes that you fit your machine, or rather your machine fits you properly. So it is a bit of an expense, but done well, it's a one-time thing. I mean, obviously you have different types of bikes. It's more than a one-time thing, but it should be a one-time thing per bike. And personally, yeah, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I do as well. And also, fits aren't necessarily gospel by each person that provide them. You will find fitters that have a certain tendency or style, and this doesn't necessarily mean that it will be the best for you. In most cases, the best way to do it is to refer to cyclists in your area, that ones that would value a fit, time trialists or anybody of certain note. Ask them what they've done for fits, see what they've done, and try to find out what you can before you go in to get fitted too, because certain people do have tendencies to change certain things around. But an ideal fit should be generally consistent across the board. There will be small alterations, but from one person or one system to the next, there should be consistencies across when you're looking at good fits. So if you do get a bike fit and you feel like it's poor, or perhaps it's causing any type of issues, give it some time to see if it works. And if you do feel that it doesn't, or if data backs up that it isn't effective, then once again, you can always fine tune that a little more.
And most fitters will welcome you back. I mean, they don't expect to fit you and then cut you loose and have everything exactly dialed in. So it'll probably be a bit of a process. And with the right fitter, it's not going to be one that grows in expense every time you revisit your fit or revisit that fitter.
Yeah, exactly. The goal is to get you on a right fit, and they're living off of that. So good reputations. Tim asks, I've been following this sweet spot based low volume plan and was by far riding the best I ever have. That's good to hear. I was making huge gains. I was on week 5 of the sweet spot base low volume 2 plan and had some life setbacks. I've been off the bike for 4 weeks and ready to start again. Question is, where should I start back up? How far should I go back in the plan? I am 100% healthy and can hit it hard, no injuries to nurse, etc. So you were on week 5 and you had some life setbacks and you've been off the bike for 4 weeks. In the middle of sweet spot base 2, where should he start back in?
So 4 weeks is long enough to lose a substantial amount of fitness. So definitely don't expect to dive right back into where you were. I'd probably start the sweet spot base low volume 2 at the beginning. So basically you're just going to step back 4 weeks and start with a reassessment. So get your new number and then just move forward from there. If you're crunched for time and you've got an important event coming up, you could jump back in at that 5th week, but if you have the luxury of those extra 4 weeks, I would definitely repeat the entire training block.
That's a great point. It's critical at this point too, when you're in your base phase, to make sure that you're building lasting solid fitness. So it's a very important time to make sure that you're following those directions.
All right, I'll feel this next one out. Nicole F asks, when it's really hot out, I naturally have to slow down but maintain my effort. Am I getting less training benefit by slowing down in hotter conditions? That's a tough one, but you are. So you're training at a lower level of power. How much lower it is than the objective of the workout, it depends. So if you're doing a threshold workout where you're supposed to be at 95% and you're at 85%, you're not going to get the same sort of stress that you're after. But there's really not much you can do about it, save for gradually acclimating to the hot weather. And you do that over typically the course of, 10, 12, 14 days of doing progressively harder workouts. So you obviously are training indoors. So do your tougher stuff in an air conditioned environment. And then when you need to get outside or when you need to start that acclimation process, do your easier rides outdoors. Over time, you'll be able to do a little bit more work and everything will steadily rise. You'll still be getting your quality indoors and hopefully your fitness will continue to increase both in your short-term high-intensity stuff and your low-intensity stuff in the heat.
Perfect. Carlos asks, I am preparing for a half-distance triathlon late in October with a hilly bike leg profile. I plan to follow the half-distance triathlon plan. Should I make any changes to the plan to better prepare for a hilly course?
Not particularly, Carlos. I mean, the primary concern here is first aerobic endurance, but also your muscle endurance. How you choose to apply that when you're out on the course is entirely a matter of pacing. So you're still going to build the same type of fitness. It's just a question of how you're going to employ it when it comes race day. And in the case of rolling hills, obviously you're there's two approaches. There's the kill the hill approach where you drill the hills and then try to recover on the downhills. And then there's just the even Steven approach, which I would advocate in this case, such that you just maintain probably, 75% to 85% of your threshold power over the course of your half distance bike leg.
Paul asks, hi, what is the best way to gauge pacing on century rides? I've been back to cycling for a year after over 5 years off and can average 17.5 miles an hour in training. So the question is, what's the best way to gauge pacing on large or long duration rides?
Conservatively, in a word. So if you're going to be out there for, upwards of 5 hours, I'm sure, the last thing you want to do is blow yourself up early on by working too hard. So, I mean, it's very much a learning process. And if you don't have the benefit of on-bike power, then, you kind of have to go by feel, even using speed, like you say, 70 miles per hour in training. Well, that doesn't cover all the bases. You could be on a climb where 17.5 miles isn't going to happen. It can be on a descent where 40 miles an hour is going to happen. So you just kind of have to gain a feel for what's too hard. And there is going to be probably a bit of trial and error, but if you keep it conservative, worst case you finish with a little extra gas in the tank and it takes you a little bit longer, but you go out a little too aggressively, and it's going to be a long, painful day, or maybe a very short one.
James asks, he mentions that he's transitioning from road racing to cross racing. It's typical for this time of year. Race season starts in mid-September. What training plan should I follow now?
If you already have fitness coming off of your road racing season, and I'm guessing you do, I would jump right into one of the cross plans. So mid-September is what, about 4 weeks away. So if you started the whatever volume version of the cyclocross plan, that would get you through the first 4 weeks. And then as you continue to race, you can move through those final 4 weeks.
Perfect. Derek asks, when I find myself out riding on the road, I generally look at my heart rate and it's almost always around threshold when I'm going for segments and different things like that. Should this be where I should be riding at, or how should I be governing my riding when I'm outside?
That's a tough one, Derek. It sounds like you're spending a lot of time working in that kind of a gray zone where you're never really taking it easy enough to allow recovery or to gain aerobic endurance, and you're never really pushing hard enough to elevate your fitness. So this is where structured training plans come into play. They give you direction, a particular objective for every workout. It sounds like maybe you just go out and kind of ride hard every time with no particular objective. So a bit of structure could probably go a long ways in your case.
Yeah, and if you are a trainer road user, the training plans that we have, if you do find yourself riding outside instead of following workouts inside, it doesn't mean that you can't attempt to emulate the workout profile when you're outside.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those intervals and the workouts are prescribed and with intention and with purpose. So John B. asks, I've recently started training on your sustained power build plan. How do you recommend mixing your plan on a power trainer with me wanting to also train outside? I don't currently have a power meter for outdoor cycling.
Yeah, this is also a common question, John. It's a good one. I almost always recommend the same thing, and it's get your quality indoors and your mileage outdoors. So when you have a very structured interval workout that has very specific objectives, it's a lot easier to do it indoors where the variables are few. And then head outdoors for those longer miles, the ones that are a bit monotonous to do indoors and don't carry as much structure with them.
Eric asks, I've been looking at picking up an electronic trainer like the Wahoo Kicker, but I don't know if there are any proven training benefits behind using a trainer like that. Will I be getting a better training experience by using an electronic trainer than a standard trainer?
What was his name?
Eric.
Eric, I'm pretty biased on this matter because pretty much every bit of indoor training I've done since 2006 has either been on a CompuTrainer or a Kicker using that ERG mode. So, and I've seen tremendous benefits personally and with the clients who I've coached over the years. It's a different experience. There's really, it's unforgiving. I mean, riding a trainer indoors by its nature is very steady stress. There's really no downtime unless you stop pedaling. With an ergometer, with an electronic trainer in erg mode, it's even less forgiving. You are locked into the interval. And again, the only way to bail out is to back off, or is to stop pedaling. But the trainer, it brings a new level of structure to the workouts. It actually locks you in and forces you to gut it out. So when you're on a regular trainer, you may not notice as many undulations in power, but they're there. When you're on an electronic trainer, they're not there. They're simply not. The trainer kind of locks you in. And in my opinion, it's a slightly higher quality workout.
I've found the same thing with me. I'm at the end of the workout, my TSS matches up directly to the goal of the workout.
That's
when I'm using
benefit.
Trainer Road,
yeah.
Versus if I were to do it by myself, without an electronic trainer. Having said that, I still find myself using a standard trainer from time to time. Mm-hmm. And this is purely just an observation on my end. So there's no actual data to back this up. But there's something more proactive about shifting and having to raise your cadence or raise your power output And almost the opposite tends to happen if you let yourself get lazy. This doesn't happen if you don't let it happen, but yeah. You can kind of let yourself get lazy on those electronic trainers, and you tend to speed up your cadence as an interval arrives. Then the fluctuation in resistance isn't so strong.
Yeah, there are ways that you can kind of cheat the workouts on an ergometer. Not so much, and they're brief anyway. But the beauty of the electronic trainers is you have the option of going both ways. You can do the ergometer rides, or you can put it in a resistance mode or a more of a manual mode, and you have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and that's extremely valuable for workouts that have very short intervals, like micro bursts, where you'll be 15 seconds at a very high intensity, mm-hmm. and then you'll have a short rest at a very low intensity. Most trainers take anywhere from 1 to 3 to even 5 seconds, most electronic trainers, to make such drastic changes in resistance happen. So sometimes you'll feel as if you're missing out perhaps on those type of intervals, but something also to keep in mind is that if it takes that much time to change on the front end, it's also going to take that much time to change on the back end.
Yeah, too. It all comes out in the wash. Yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, just to really illustrate the quality of the workouts, I mean, we have very specific goals and very specific power percentages of your functional threshold. And you know, we're looking for a high level of adherence during the workout. If you compare a screen capture of a ride done on a regular trainer versus one done on an electronic trainer, you can see how vastly more consistent it is. Once again, it just doesn't let you off the hook. You're locked in.
It certainly does. Carlos asks, I have a power meter in a regular trainer. I find that my power output is about 15% lower on my trainer. Is this normal, or am I doing something wrong with the trainer resistance? Carlos, maybe if you could respond and let us know what type of trainer you're on, that can give us a little bit more information on your situation that could be valuable. But having said that, Chad, it isn't uncommon to see riders putting out less power in certain situations on an indoor trainer, right?
Absolutely. There's a big difference between, or potentially a big difference between training indoors and training outdoors. Most of it boils down to cooling. Even if you've got a couple big fans blasting you indoors, you're probably still not cooling as well as you will with a bit of a headwind outdoors. There's also a question of motivation. You know, sitting in one place, watching a screen may not be as motivating as, you know, powering up a hill. So I attribute the difference in performance, though, more to cooling than anything else. So the cooler you can make your training environment, the better in terms of negating that power difference discrepancy. But then don't fall into the trap of doing all your training in a cool environment and then expecting to go outside into a hot environment and race well. So there has to be a bit of a balance there.
I've personally found that my performance has become more in line, my indoor performance with my outdoor performance, as my familiarity and experience with indoor training increases as well. At first, it was very difficult for me to output the same amount of power, whether that was psychological or whether I've gotten better at controlling the environment.
Yeah, that's a good observation. That's accurate.
Certainly. And Carlos, you mentioned that you're on a roller. I assume you say a roller, but I assume you mean rollers. With a weight, and it's adjustable. It has manually adjustable resistance. So if that's the case, if you're on a set of rollers, there's also that to take into account. You're expending more energy to balance in a way that you just don't have to balance outside. Rollers are not necessarily a replication of outdoor experience. The thing about that is while rollers aren't a replication of the outdoor experience, they're kind of their own experience entirely. Yeah. You're having to use your muscles in different ways to be able to balance in ways that you just don't have to outside. So keep in mind every little bit of muscle fiber that's firing to keep you balanced on the bike in a certain way, that's probably taking away from raw power output that you would be putting out if you were just locked into a trainer outside. Now that's one that's tough to argue when you're outside because there's a lot of elements going on, but keep that in mind. Rollers do require a certain extra bit of effort with that as well. So perfect. Oh, and you have no balancing issues there because you've got the front wheel mounted strongly. So I guess just like Chad said, time and making sure that your environment is worked out properly. And be patient with yourself too. Your power output will probably increase as the more you utilize indoor training. So perfect. We're going to take a pause here while just a few more questions come in. So feel free to let those questions roll through. Any questions you have on cycling, training, or anything that pertains to trainer road as well, we're happy to answer as much as we can. And yeah, so we'll just be right back here in just a few seconds. Okay, we're back. Nicole, you asked one that hits pretty close to home for us. Any interesting stories behind the names of the trainer road workouts? Chad, that's your wheelhouse.
Yeah, so we initially started with workouts that I had utilized at my my own indoor training studios. And they all had these complex descriptive names that weren't going to work well for trainer road. So Nate just decided that we were going to use mountain peak names. And we started with mostly local climbs. And then, of course, as the workout library expanded, we ran out of names, and now I've been pillaging these mountain peak websites for peak names all over the world, and I'm actually running out of them.
Yeah, so we need more mountains. And a lot of them, too, it's pretty cool for us to see. Geiger is a really common one that's done by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Geiger Grade, for those of you that don't know, it's just a local climb in our area that all of us frequent. One of Greg LeMond's historical climbs. He rode very regularly when he trained here. So a lot of the workouts that we have, while they don't necessarily emulate the peak itself, they're just a good naming convention. So, for those, Neil, you ask, if I have a crit race coming up on the weekend, what is the best training I can do in the days leading up to it? So, now this is, if you want to give us a little bit more of some context.
Let me start by saying it's going to depend on the prioritization of that race. So if you use the CBA, A being top priority race, C being a training race paradigm, then, well, it depends. I mean, if it's just a training race, you just do your prescribed training and just go out and hurt yourself over the course of the weekend. If it's a more important race, then ideally you'll time your specialty block to put you more toward the end of that block, maybe even in the taper. Neil chimed in, says it's an A race. So if you're using one of the plans and you can time it such that you're tapering just prior to it, that would be ideal. If you're in the midst of the plan and you want to do a mini taper, you can just kind of step back maybe 3-4 days and just do exactly that, like a 3 or 4 day mini taper, wherein you maintain all the intensity. You're still hitting those same high target watts, but you're doing shorter intervals with more recoveries and shorter workouts in general. So a big decrease in volume, no decrease in intensity.
And within those principles that Chad just laid out there, you will find certain things within a pattern that that are beneficial to you personally as well.
True, yes. So like if you know you race on Saturday and you have to have a priming workout in your legs on Friday, from experience, then that's what you do. I don't know too many riders who don't actually benefit from that priming workout the day prior. There are some people who probably carry too much fatigue into the end of the week, and adding another workout just prior to the race isn't the best idea. But if you've tapered at all and you're feeling reasonably fresh, get out there the day prior. It doesn't take, you know, 20, 30, maybe 40 minutes, and just beat yourself up with some of the efforts, shorter versions, but some of the efforts you'll face during your criterium.
And I'm sure you'll refine that as time goes on as well. You'll figure out what works and what doesn't work.
It's one big learning process.
It absolutely is. And one thing to add to that too is that outside of just the training aspect, which you just more asked about the training aspect, but a lot of things play into that and how you feel on race day. So try to be just as we're systematic with our training, try to be systematic in your rest and your nutrition and hydration as you go into those events. So then if you keep things consistent, at the very least, you can keep them measurable and then refine that process as you go on.
Agreed.
John, you ask, I recently performed an FTP test for the first time. Congrats. When I did my first workout, though, I increased my workout intensity by 9%. Do you think it would be worth also changing my FTP for future workouts to match this intensity?
Probably would, John. It's a common occurrence for people to underassess. It's especially if you're doing the 20-minute test, but just as much so with the 2x8s. People don't know how to pace, so you have no basis for comparison. So you're kind of winging it. And that first workout may not be a good representation of your actual fitness. So when you get through that, And you start doing the workouts and you know they're just too easy, or in your case, you're able to elevate the work intensity substantially, And you got a couple options, and one is to do what you've done and nudge it up for, on a workout to workout basis. The other option is to get in there and manually tweak your FTP because you know it's higher than measured. And the third is to reassess. And even if you don't want to reassess, just stick with the first two recommendations. And then during your next assessment, no, you've got quite a bit more fitness than you initially measured.
Yeah, it's a skill in itself, assessment.
Very much.
That's for sure. Paul asks, or he mentions, I recently did the Sufferfest Essential Styles workout with video and found that as the workout progressed, there was a time lag. By the end, at least 10 seconds, making a time and problem with the transitions for recovery and efforts. What is the issue here? Does it have an impact on the data recovered or come out in the wash? So that's a great question for our support team. They can get you the different answers on that. That generally has to do with video card issues. We see that at least commonly. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the situation in your case, that the video card that's rendering the video can do so and over the course of the workout cause such a lag that it would add up to what you mentioned there, 10 seconds. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that it is the case in your situation. So reach out to support at trainerroad.com. Or if you want, you can just toss me your email right now in the chat. I'll mark it down and then we'll make sure one of our support agents gets out to you and make sure that that's reserved. And now regarding if that would affect the data at the end of your workout, nope, it shouldn't. You'll see your data itself will be recorded separate from the video. So you don't have to worry about that. Your data is still there. Neil, second question, if you have time. Of course we have time. Yeah, we're good. What does Trainer Road recommend for diet? I've been trying to improve my diet, but don't really have any guidelines I've been following. Mm. It would be great if you guys came up with a diet plan as well.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time researching nutrition, and it's because it's a vastly complex topic. And just like training riders for performance, it's really subjective. What one rider responds to may not be as effective for another. I do try to disseminate some of what I learn over the course of maybe the screen text is typically just recommendations on post-workout nutrition and timing, nothing more specific than get some in you and do it now. Whether or not we delve any more deeply into that, it's just, like I said, it's such a big topic. I mean, there are people who do that for a living, that very thing. So we could certainly talk about it. I'd like to be able to offer more concrete advice on nutrition, but it's not something we're working on at the moment.
It's pretty heavily circumstantial. So number one, it's difficult for us to suggest, but at the same time, that's also something for you to consider. And the fact that we just mentioned that keeping things controlled and measuring the difference, if you are trying with it, trying a different diet or anything else, cycling can be one good way for you to measure the effectiveness of a diet in a certain context.
Yeah, if I were to offer one piece of advice, it would be to record everything you eat for a period of time, whether it's 3 days or a full week, and then schedule a consult with a sports nutritionist if one's available. I'd be willing to bet there are even ones available online that could offer sounder advice than I could give you.
Certainly. Carlos, you ask... I apologize if this question was already asked, but when will the Android SW come out? By SW, I don't know if you're talking about
software.
Yeah, I assume so. Android isn't on our immediate roadmap. We have a lot of different features that we're building out right now, including a revamped desktop app for PC and Mac that is, of course, by our standards, this is coming from us, but it is very nice. It is a huge improvement. You're going to love the interface. And in addition to that, we've also built out, we've put in a lot of effort into how the software actually interacts with your devices. Long story short, you should have a much better experience. So if you do have an Android device, you're not left out. You're going to have, for PC and Mac, you're going to have a fantastic solution for that. And Android at some point, we do hope to get to it, but it's not on our immediate roadmap. So... Perfect. And the next question here, Paul asks, I am due to go on a cruise for 2 weeks and would still like to do TR workouts, though suspect the bike machines on board the ship won't necessarily be able to work with TR. That's probably the case, Paul, but kudos to you for wanting to try to do it. The question is there a way to overcome this? So is there a way to do trainer road workouts when you don't have your trainer or your devices, if you're just on a spin bike?
Yeah, that's a good question. Not that I can think of. I mean, you could switch over to heart rate based workouts for the time being and try to go based on that. You could recreate the intervals based on your perceived exertion. If you've done enough workouts and you're familiar with what particular intensities feel like, you can kind of try to create that. My fear is that you're going to be stuck on a recumbent or some sort of upright monstrosity that doesn't even close to resemble your bike. And it's going to be a tall ask.
Yeah. And also going back to the original question we had about bike fit, that's something to consider as well. If you're on a bike that most of them are adjustable to a certain extent, but it probably will not fit like your normal bike. So there's something to keep in mind there. There's the risk of getting some type of a tendonitis or overuse injury from being in a strange position or foreign position to you.
Yeah, but honestly, Paul, if you can get in there and even on, you know, whatever equipment they have and do a day or two of intensity each of those 2 weeks, you're not going to lose any fitness. I mean, maintenance is actually a really forgiving sort of thing. Building fitness is tough. Maintaining it, comparatively much easier.
Absolutely. And also, you can look at the workouts that are scheduled for you in your workout or in your training plan, try to emulate those to the best of your ability. There's a chance, a small chance, but they may have Watt bike branded stationary bikes. And if that's the case, those actually should work with our desktop app that we currently have. I don't believe that it works with our iOS app, but we can double check on that for you. Having said that, I wouldn't be surprised if they did not have Watt bikes on the ship. Those tend to be more of a high-end unit. Those put out an amp plus power signal, so that's how that could be used. John, you ask, when is the new software coming? I assume you're referring to the desktop app. It's coming soon. We don't have any firm ETA on it right now, but I can say this much, that we're not far off from going into a beta. So, and putting that out for people to start putting in some testing on it. We're not far off from that. So, but yeah, no ETA right now on it. And Ezra, your question is, what is the best way to increase my climbing ability? Would pedaling a large gear be better than trying to train my aerobic system?
It's a good question, Ezra. Climbing boils down to muscle endurance. So the higher your FTP, the better you're going to climb. And climbing relates to your body weight too. So your strength to weight ratio is a big concern here. So two things: you want to elevate your functional threshold and you want to cut weight if at all possible. As far as building your threshold, I don't know where you are in your season, but the sustained power build, and then perhaps the climbing road race would be good ways to go. But all you're trying to do is improve your power. As far as the pedaling goes, there's something to be said for turning a big gear slowly and developing good control at low spins if you know those are the sort of climbs you're going to encounter. I'm not a big proponent of on the bike strength training. I don't think, I don't need to get into that, but just keep in mind the sort of climbs you're going to face. If they're the sort of climbs that are going to force you into a slow spin, then absolutely practice them. It's not necessarily going to make you a better climber, but it's going to make you one that's better adapted to the types of climbs you're going to face. But the key is elevate your FTP, lower your body weight.
Paul, you have a question asking a more product side question. Is Trainer Road going to consider looking at being able to create workouts in the creator based on heart rate? That's a good question. It's one that we've gotten from time to time. It's something that we will consider as we rebuild our workout creator to match the desktop app. Having said that, since our virtual power system allows people to train with the benefits of power at a fraction of the cost, it's a much better option for you. So workouts that are structured by your heart rate, while they may be structured to numbers that come from your heart rate, that doesn't necessarily reflect your actual output as a cyclist. So heart rate is a highly variable metric, one that can fluctuate a number of beats based off of your caffeine consumption, hydration, temperature, sleep schedule, stress, any number of things. So, and also it's a lagging indicator of your effort. So meaning that if you do have intervals that are supposed to be structured from, you know, 5-minute intervals, whatever the duration may be, you should expect that when you start going hard, your heart rate will not instantly spike. It's going to take time to get up to where you have it planned to be, and then it will take time for it to drop off once again. So it can be difficult to use your heart rate to structure a workout and get an effective workout when you compare it to the benefits that you get with training with power. If there wasn't an option for people to train with power, in other words, if virtual power wasn't there, I would definitely see this being a greater need perhaps. But just the same, we aren't laying that to the side. That is something we are considering building in to the workout creator. Perfect. And let's see, Carlos, we have another question here. And your question, you say TR is clearly a game changer. Everyone I've turned to it, loves it, and they have improved. That's good to hear. Awesome. If I can be so bold as to suggest a feature that will show left-right power ratios and pedal, it would be helpful to improve performance and technique a lot more to smoothness. Chad, could you provide some type of insight as to left-right power? Have you looked into that? Have you used it at all? And what are the benefits of it?
Yeah, I have it on a couple of my power meters. I'm in a fortunate position. I have a collection of the things. And I find it's motivating, and it'd probably be useful if my left-right discrepancy was bigger. So it's subtle in my case, and most people I've talked to, it's subtle in their cases too. That's not to say it isn't useful at all, and it's not to say we won't incorporate that feature at some point. I mean, the data is being broadcast. It's up to us to capture it and display it or utilize it in some manner. So I can't promise it will happen. Personally, I'd like to see it happen. I think the more information, the better.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see as more power meters are coming out that measure left-right. Just within the last few months, we've had two more power meters come to the market. Mm-hmm. PowerTap's new P1 pedals, and then WattTeam has their PowerBeat, I believe it's called, and those do left-right measurement, and they also do so at a very low cost. As a result, I think that as more power meters show left-right measurement, perhaps we'll understand how we can better implement that data, or perhaps better use that data to make yourself a faster cyclist. That's really our focus, is whatever data we have, we just want to use it to make you a faster cyclist. So if we have a solid game plan on how a person can use left-right data to become faster, which obviously there are plenty of ideas on how that can work, if we find that it works and it's something of demand, I assume that we'll be implementing it. It's just a matter of time. Who knows when? So perfect. We'll let some more questions trickle in here as we're getting down closer to the end of our time. But we'll just put things on pause briefly while you enter in any extra questions that you may have. All right, Paul, you ask, I have the tax flow where I can set up the resistance based on a set scale of resistance, -4 to +9, or alternatively set the wattage. Which is the best setting to use? That's probably a better question for our support team as well. Paul, they can have information specifically on the tax flow. As far as setting your resistance based on a -4 to +9, just a set scale of resistance, or alternatively set the wattage. When you say set the wattage, I assume that you're talking about just set yourself in. I don't think that trainer has erg mode. If it does, then that's the best way to use it. I would recommend. If you're talking about just setting it to a set wattage and letting it run at that power target, that doesn't work very well with trainer road because of the fact that you should be following whatever the power or the required power.
Except perhaps in base training, if you're looking for a long, steady effort, that might work just fine.
Yeah,
but that would be about the only time I can think of that in recovery rides.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that's the best way is. If you are using that and you're at a certain resistance setting and you do have a scale of -4 to +9, my recommendation, because I believe the tax flow puts out power data for you to look at, my recommendation with that is to use that, I should say pick the setting that allows you the greatest range. That's a really important thing. So it allows you to hit your high power targets and low power targets. So
I'll field this next one, or I'll read the question. Carlos asks, sometimes I'm not able to complete the last few intervals of a challenging sustained build workout. What's the best way to go and still get the best results out of that workout? I love this question, Carlos, because this is one of the big benefits of Trainer Road. We have those little adjuster arrows for workout intensity, which allow you to change things on the fly. So if you're on an electronic trainer and you're locked in, super helpful. And if you just want your target power to change based on a little bit of a reduction, super helpful. In the case of sustained build workouts, you're probably looking at growing muscle endurance. So they're probably longer intervals, which explains why you're fading, not completing the last few intervals. Basically, you're encountering fatigue. So the question is, when do you cut it off, or do you cut it off? You can actually still get quite a lot out of these longer intervals with a small reduction in wattage, you know, maybe 2 or 3%. Maybe that's just enough to keep you hanging in there such that you can complete the intervals. Alternatively, and I'm probably a bigger fan of this, is to take a quick back pedal break. So just give yourself maybe 10, 15 seconds of unloading your muscles. Spin backwards. You're still moving. The blood's still flowing. But it's enough recovery, and just enough so that you can get back in there and productively complete the interval.
Perfect. Sun or Soon, forgive me if I mispronounce that. You mentioned that you have both a power meter and a heart rate monitor. What should I be monitoring with my heart rate monitor to know I'm making an improvement when going through the plans? So how do you measure your improvement with heart rate, even though I assume you're using a power meter to train with Trainer Robe, but what fluctuations or changes should you look at?
Yeah, so over time, typically as your fitness improves, your aerobic fitness improves, you'll see lower heart rates for the same power, or you'll see more power for the same heart rate. In any case, there's a correlation between what your power is doing relative to what your heart rate's doing, and that interchange or that relationship is more power per heartbeat. That's ideally what you're looking for. That only happens to a point though, and that's typically something that tops out during your base conditioning. So if you're using that beyond base, probably not going to see that much of a change. And depending on how fit you are in general, you might not see that big of a change during your base conditioning.
And a common question I see with this also is people using their heart rate max as a type of indication of their fitness or a trend in fitness. Chad, what do you say
about that? Max heart rate's problematic in a lot of ways. First off, it's super difficult to measure. And then secondly, working out at percentages of maximum heart rate is far less fruitful than percentages of lactate threshold heart rate. So if you do insist on training with heart rate, or even just, you know, complementing your training with that information, your functional threshold heart rate or your lactate threshold heart rate, not exactly the same things, but close enough for our purposes, is the way to go.
Certainly. Yeah. And to clarify too, when we're mentioning your lactate threshold heart rate, or more or less your heart rate at threshold, is that correct?
Yeah. There's typically your heart rate at functional threshold power is lower than your lactate threshold heart rate. So whereas you might be able to sustain your functional threshold heart rate for a full hour, really unlikely you're going to be able to hold your lactate threshold heart rate for an entire hour.
That's a good point. And once again, definitely rely more on the power data, I would say, as you monitor your progress with your fitness.
Heart rate data is complementary. It's useful stuff, absolutely, especially when it comes to recovering and deciding, you know, when to cut a workout short, skip a workout, postpone a workout. But your key metric is power, plain and simple.
And Andrew, you ask, with the growing use of HRV, I assume you're referring to heart rate variability to monitor recovery. Do you see any future plans to create dynamically workouts with this data? So I assume you mean based off of measurements of heart rate or anything else, resting heart rate values, to then adjust your workouts. Hmm. That is a great idea, and it's definitely one we've considered before. I am a person that uses HRV to a certain extent. I use my resting heart rate with diligence and use that to kind of check up on my form, but. Chad, your insights to HRV, have you used it much, or have you done much research on that?
I haven't. I understand what it's about, and it would be cool if we could incorporate that in some way. I don't know that we would want to dynamically modify workouts. I'm guessing you mean change them on the fly based on your heart rate recovery. That again, it ties back to training with heart rate and all the peril it's fraught with. So, I think that's pretty unlikely. I can see us maybe making use of that information in some manner, but not to tailor the workouts.
You know, and from a hardware perspective too, certain things would have to happen in order for that to come into place. For example, Fitbits or different heart rate monitors that are optical that you might use 24/7 to measure your resting heart rate as you sleep and as you wake, everything else, that data is still closed down. They don't share it on an open protocol. So as a result, we actually can't access that data yet. I assume that that will change as time goes on, but perhaps the only change will be that cycling devices will be measuring heart rate 24/7 via optical hardware or anything else. We'll see. But it's certainly, it's also one thing to say that if you do have a good enough fix on your resting heart rate and how it should vary as you train and your life is controlled enough that you feel confident in that you definitely, you can make decisions as far as, you know, affecting your training based off of that. Having said that, it's pretty tough to apply that to a huge scale, just because of the variability of a person's, lifestyle to everything else that's associated with heart rate. So. Mm-hmm. Perfect. That looks like that's the last question to run through. We appreciate you guys joining us for this Ask a Coach Q&A. We do plan on doing more of these semi-regularly throughout the year. So keep an eye out on Facebook, invite your friends. And once again, this is purely get your coaching questions answered, cycling questions answered, whatever it is. So whatever questions you may have as time progresses, feel free to come back and to join us and to bring other people as well. We appreciate it. Train smart and train hard. We'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks for joining us, you guys.